Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived. This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
Thank you. Thanks for that, everybody. Thank you. Thanks, and welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting, as always, live out of the city of Chicago. I am in my studio near the lake over here, Lake Michigan, and it feels as if summer does not want to leave, which is fine, which is okay. It is just so beautiful, but one of the things I can tell that summer is leaving because the days are getting shorter. And there's no doubt about it. We have 76 degrees near the lake, but it feels like 86 because of the humidity. Thanks for tuning into the show. Thanks for calling your calls. My guest today is author Tish Springfield. Okay, great. I like that's a cute name, Tish Springfield. I was chatting with her a little bit earlier to confirm her appearance on the show, and yeah, Tish Springfield. I want to say that October and November are going to be some, I'm going to have guests crawling out of my ear, you know. So it's going to be amazing. It's going to be fun. And I'm totally looking forward to it. And also Thanksgiving. Before Thanksgiving, I believe there's Halloween, you know, so it's going to be exciting, folks. So I hope you tune into the George Wilder Jr. Show and listen live. There's nothing wrong with listening. We're listening to the show when you podcast the show, you know, recorded shows. That's fine. That's great. You can do those things too. I mean, sometimes there are more people sometimes listen to my podcast more so than they listen live because people don't always have time. People have busy lives. There's no doubt about it. Busy, 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 busy. I'm busy, 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 busy all the time. You know, even if when I'm in my studio, I am totally busy. I mean, I'm bouncing my ass back and forth, doing this, doing that, trying to make sure that the radio show and everything else is going to go fine. My son is, you know, he's doing whatever he's doing. And I am also the producer of the show. I don't get a penny for it. So if you think I'm getting paid, you can maybe sometime in the near future. But as of now, nothing. This show costs me more to put on than it's bringing in. Believe me, I'm getting there's a few things coming from the show, but you know, you never know. You just got to keep hanging in there and things get better. Just like I tell my audience, we're here to make the world a better place, one show at a time. All right, welcome to the George Wander Jr. Show once again. My guest is author Tish Springfield and Springsteen, like Bruce Springsteen, Tish Springsteen. And I'm hearing that Bruce Springsteen, the singer, the rock and roll singer, he's going to be turning 67 years old. 67 years old. And he's not about to slow down. So happy birthday to Bruce Springsteen. Happy birthday. Okay, let's move right along. We've done the weather. In the city of Chicago, they're talking about hiring more police officers. 500 more police officers. And a lot of people are saying, how is this guy going to pay for it? How the mayor is going to pay for it? The mayor is going to pay for these officers, these police officers, as he's trying to pay for everything else, raising taxes on the citizen. That's the only way he's going to pay for it. That's the only way he's going to be able to pay for it. They're talking about maybe he's going to pay for it through reducing police overtime. Bull. He's going to raise taxes, reducing police overtime. You're going to need more to, if you're going to, you're going to need more than just reducing police overtime to pay for these thousand or so officers that they say they're going to hire. Now, you got this school superintendent. He's blaming society. He's blaming parents. He's blaming whatever, gangbangers not being able to find jobs, or they don't have fathers or mentors or anything. And somehow he's blaming society for a lot of this instead of acting as if the police doesn't have a stake in all of this. And we know the police do have a stake in this crime wave that's plaguing Chicago. I just want to say this. You can hire as many police officers as you want. And I hope they do hire officers. But you got to have a plan. You can hire as many officers, police officers, great police officers, good police officers. But if you don't have a plan to bring down the violence, if you don't have a solution, of hiring officers is not a solution. You can hire those officers. The solutions is to have a plan to bring crime down. I mean, you can hire every officer you can, but if you don't have a plan, it's not going to be worth dirt. You have to have a plan. I think if some of these politicians and some of these city leaders thought before they acted, I mean, you don't have to hire one cop if you have a good plan to take down these bad guys. You don't even need one cop. But if you're going to hire 1,000 cops and you don't have a plan, a viable plan, or coming up with a solution, a viable solution, and letting everybody know, the people of Chicago know, what the hell is 1,000 more police officers on the streets going to do? It's just, because at any rate, the taxpayer is going to be paying for this. You know, they're going to be paying for this. I've said this many times. I know they are politicians and city leaders and others alike are listening to this show. I know that. I mean, there's no, that's no brainer. The way you saw, and I've been saying this almost every day on the show, the way to solve the city crime in the city of Chicago and probably elsewhere is to put police officers in these crime-ridden communities, post them there. There should be police presence 24 hours, 24/7. In some of these crime-ridden neighborhoods. Police officers should be posted there. They should never leave. There should always be police presence. If a police officer is working part-time and he's working full-time, part-time and just only doing 4 or 5 hours a day, when it comes for him to leave work, someone should be replacing him right there. posting, as they do in security. I mean, security does this. And I think they should be posted. I mean, just like the military, they're posted at a certain base 24/7. I think the police officers should be posted in some of these neighborhoods, never leaving them. Because if you're patrolling, whether you're on foot or you're in a police car, a squad car, the bad guys are watching you. They know when you come. They know when you leave. And a lot of times crimes are being committed in some of these neighborhoods when there's no police presence. There's nothing. You have to have a steady police presence in some of these crime-ridden neighborhoods. That would be an deterrent to some of these guys who are committing crimes. If they see a police wagon or a police car stationed and posted at a particular corner or intersection, they are going to be skeptical about committing a crime or a shooting because of police presence, which police are supposed to be deterrent to crime. You have to have a plan. You can't just put officers out there willy-nilly. You got to, you know, if you don't have a plan, you're not going to bring down any crime. I don't give a damn if you're hiring 200 officers, 2,000 officers. You have to have a plan of action, a plan of bringing this down. And one of the plans that I have espoused on this show since I've been on the air, post officers 24/7 in some of these communities, in these communities round the clock, because crime usually happens around 1, 2, and 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. That's when these guys are out with guns and shooting people. And like I said before, the police know who these guys are. They know who the gangbangers are. They know what the bad guys are. Go arrest them. Do not wait until they commit a crime. Arrest them. You know, post them. And I've had other solutions. I mean, what about the National Guard, the U.S. Army? I mean, Chicago's crime is at an epidemic proportions. The governor, Bruce Rauner, should probably declare Chicago a state of emergency. Of course, there's money coming in from the federal government to help to fight crime. But we're going to need more than just money to fight crime in the city of Chicago. We're going to need the police department is going to need to come up with some solutions, some viable plans to take this down. I think if they had plans, real good plans to lower the violence in Chicago, they wouldn't need that many officers. I believe that. And if you don't want to do that, if you don't want to post officers in these crime-ridden communities 24/7, then put the Army over there. What about the National Guard? You've got to do something. These guys, I applaud those people in some of these communities who are walking the streets saying, taking back their communities and trying to get these guys to stop killing each other. But it's not working. It's not working. These guys are shoot. Walk up and somebody sitting in their car, a guy walk up and just shoot the guy sitting in his car. You stopping at a stoplight or a stop sign, somebody walk up to you and shoot you in the head just for the hell of it, because they want to. These guys are making news, and that's what they like. You want to stop crime, you got to do something drastic. You just cannot keep throwing taxpayer money at this. You have to do something drastic. We have a National Guard. Arm them and put them over there in some of these communities. The bad guys are not going to shoot at the Army, The bad guys are not going to shoot at the U.S. Army. You know why? Because the Army, they're going to shoot back. And they're going to come with some real firepower on their asses. You know, but I don't know why the mayor, the governor, some of these other politicians do not want to put the Army, the U.S. Army, or the National Guard in some of these communities. You can have them, the Army, in some of these communities. 24/7. You can have the National Guard 24/7. That will bring some of this crap down while the police go in and arrest them. That's what this show is about, making the world a better place. I'm coming up with all kinds of solutions to solve the problems in the city of Chicago. If I was the mayor, if I was the governor, and crime was as high as it is now and continuing on up, that's what I would do. I would not hesitate to do that, because my job as a politician, as mayor or governor, would be one of the criterias for governor or mayor of the city and state is to protect the people of this state and of the city. Right now, they are not doing it. And hiring more cops, I'm not going to say is a bad thing. I'm not going to say if it's going to work or if it's not going to work, hiring more cops. But I will say, where are the plan? The plan should not be just sticking more cops over here who are patrolling. Because if you're patrolling an area, you might as well not have a cop over there, because the bad guys are going to be watching the police officers. They're watching them. You think they're going to shoot and kill somebody if a police car is around, if someone is patrolling? You think they're going to pull out their gun and shoot? No. But if they don't see a cop in the area, they don't see foot patrols, they don't see anybody, they're going to shoot. They're going to shoot because there's no one patrolling. There's no police around in the area, nowhere. And this is an appetite for the crooks to kill people. You have to have a plan of action, more so than you are going to hire so many officers. Obviously, there's no doubt about it. We're going to be paying for it. And there's no lie about that, okay? They don't want to say it, but we are, because Mary Emanuel is nothing but he's a taxing governor. He gives in to the unions. He gives in to the teachers. He gives in to the pensions and all of that. And it all falls on the citizens of Chicago. I mean, the taxes in the city of Chicago, they're so high that it's pricing some people out of their homes, pricing some people out of their apartments. People are leaving the city, period. Taxes. But hey, wow, you know what? They continue to raise taxes. They don't care. If everybody get up and leave Chicago, who's going to pay, who's going to pay these taxes? There's a lot of people on welfare that's getting food stamps, and they can't afford to pay taxes. Because the more having people to pay taxes who can barely afford to pay taxes, you're putting them on food stamps. You're putting them on a government, on government programs. And most people who are on government programs, they don't pay taxes. So these people ought to think before they decide to raise taxes, more taxes, on top of the zillion taxes that they've raised in the past. It's just crazy. And most of the time, most people in the city of Chicago, if not all, we don't want these taxes. But these politicians, they put it on us anyway. They start talking about the need for it. And there is no need to be raising taxes on people who can barely pay for it. Every time the city needs money, it goes, Mary Rahm Emanuel sticks his hands in everybody's pocket and then acts as if we like it. We don't like it. 80% of the people, 90% of people of Chicago hate these taxes. They don't want these taxes, but the alderman and the mayor put these taxes on us anyway and act as if we, and then thanking us for it. And then about to say something, folks, and then thanking us for it. You know, and what you're thanking me for it. I never gave you any approval to go in my pocket. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me right here on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me on Twitter. I'm all over the place. Google, I'm all over the place. And as I've said at the beginning of the show, author Trish Springfield. All right, I'm drinking too much coffee. Better lay off of it. It is a beautiful day in the city of Chicago. Let's go. What does this say? Chicago street vendor receives check from GoFundMe. Yeah, he's I think it's almost $400,000. He's a street vendor. He was selling ice cream. He's 89 years old, and he was having a hard time making ends meet, I guess his family. So someone came along and saw him walking the street with his ice cream truck or pushing ice cream, whatever it was. And someone set up a GoFundMe page for him. And the donation started coming in. He's an immigrant. Looks like he's Hispanic or something. And he's an immigrant. And, you know, they just, you know, gave him a check today for just about $400,000. That's got to be great. GoFundMe. Yeah, I'm pretty sure a lot of people now is going to say, I'm going to set up a GoFundMe page. Yeah, but it's not that easy. You got to make sure it's a charity case or something. But anyway, Chicago to add nearly 1,000 new police officers. And I've just got through talking about that. You can add 2,000 new police officers, but if you don't have a plan or a solution, if you don't post those guys over in these crime neighborhoods 24/7, then it's a waste of time. You know, it's a waste of time. But you know what? I'm hoping that it works. I'm hoping that hiring these officers will work. I'm hoping, because Chicago is an epidemic. We're at a state emergency. And it just shocks me and surprised me that Obama, who calls Chicago his home, he doesn't even mention it much, talk about it much, or say anything about the crime in the city of Chicago. At one time, we all wanted Obama to come back to Chicago as president and try to quell some of the violence, go out to some of these communities, these crime-ridden communities and neighborhoods, and talk to these young brothers, these young gangbangers, telling them to put the guns down, stop the violence. I mean, not only me, but, you know, community leaders, we all were getting together and trying to get Obama to come here, but he won't do it. The only time Obama is going to come here in the city of Chicago as president, if he's raising money, a fundraiser, put it that way, a fundraiser for some other candidate, and then he's gone. But I honestly think that we need Obama to come to the city of Chicago as president, as an African-American, to talk to African-Americans on the south and west sides of the city, to put the guns down, to stop the violence, and to tell them there's a better way to do things. There's a much better way, a better positive way, and to turn in the weapons. I think if he would do something like that, I think it would be a positive effect. I think these guys would listen to him. We all do. Or we wouldn't want him to come back and try something like that or do something like that. But Obama has refused. He has totally refused. My thinking is he's just scared. He's scared. You know, and I once said on the radio show, if he's scared, why would he be scared? He's got the Chicago police behind him. They're going to be flanking him. I mean, he's Secret Service, they're going to be flanking him. I mean, the state police, he's going to have all kinds of protection in the world, but he just will not come. He won't do it. I mean, for 8 years, he has not done this. And who knows? He's got about four or five more months, maybe three or four more months in office. He's going to be gone in January, and we will have a new president. But the violence in the city of Chicago, we're going to need solutions and plans to combating this violence. And I'm going to tell you something. This radio show is not about just sitting and talking. This radio show, my show, the George Wanda Jr. Show, is about taking action, doing something. And that's what we're doing here. We're doing something. We're giving solutions to the violence. I've watched several people in panels on television, in all these meetings. Everybody's talking about what's happening, but nobody's giving any solutions. Nobody's coming up with any plans. And these people are making six-figure salaries. Excuse me. And you wonder, what the hell? You know, like I said before, if I was governor and if I was mayor, I would move. This would not be happening in the city of Chicago. I mean, it just wouldn't. And it wouldn't be happening anywhere else because I would come up with viable plans, you know, like I just came up with two or three here, as I do every day, because we're about making the world a better place. And I hope you are about making the world a better place. Okay, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It's 76 degrees. It is still 76. They say it's going to be around 85 degrees tomorrow. You know, that's still hot. That's still summery weather. And tomorrow is the first day of fall. Yeah, and it's going to feel like almost the first day of summer in the city of Chicago. Isn't that something? All right, here we go. Let's see. Suburban meth lab bus yields three handguns, tactical equipment. That is something. Wow. Okay.
The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air.
So this past weekend, Hillary Clinton took a lot of heat for a comment that she made about Donald Trump's supporters when she referred to, you know, about half of them as being part of what she called a basket of deplorables. Now, politically speaking, bad move by Hillary Clinton. Factually speaking, could not have been more accurate. First of all, the quote, as usual, was pretty much taken out of context because when she was talking about the basket of deplorables, she mentioned that these were the racists, the bigots, the homophobes, the sexists, the misogynists. She did list the kind of people she was talking about, and yes, those kinds of people are absolutely abhorrent. And then she talked about the other basket. That's not filled with racist and horrible people, just people who are fed up with being taken advantage of by corporations, by the government, the anti-establishment folks that are not violent, they're not horrible, they're just people that want to see some change. That's the part that got left out. But when you look at the fact, and I know she's come out and apologized for this, I really wish she hadn't. This was a strong statement, it was a true statement, and she should have stood by it. But when you look at the facts and you look at who supports Donald Trump, you see that Hillary Clinton was absolutely right. Look at this. 65% of Donald Trump supporters think that President Barack Obama is a Muslim. 59% believe that he was not born in the United States. 31% say that we should ban homosexuals from entering the United States. 16% believe that whites are a superior race. Those are the people that support Donald Trump, but the New York Times goes a step further and lists out the other folks. 80% of likely Trump voters supported Trump's proposed ban on Muslims. 62% supported creating a national database of Muslims, and 40% supported shutting down mosques in the United States. 38% said they wish the South had won the Civil War.
All right, welcome. Okay, all right. Welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live out of Chicago. It is a great day. It feels like summer. It's the last day. It feels like it's the last day of summer, actually. Tomorrow is the first day of fall. It feels more like the first day of summer because it is really humid. All right, let's go to the phones. All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Oh, hi, George. This is Trish Springsteen calling in from Australia.
Wow. Welcome to the show, Trish Springsteen. You know what? Every time I think of Springsteen, I can hear myself on your radio. Can you turn it down a little bit?
I don't have the radio on. I'm on a phone.
Oh, I'm hearing myself. Maybe it's me. I don't know. But anyway, tell my audience about you. Give us a little bit of your bio, and what are you about?
Oh, great to be here, George. It's really fantastic to be able to speak from Australia and be heard in Chicago. I'm a multi-international award-winning public speaking mentor, coach, and author, and my passion is mentoring introverts, advocates, and authors, helping them to have the confidence to step up and share their message with those who need to hear it. So I'm all about speaking and communication and sharing your stories.
Wow. So you are a writer. You're an author.
Yes. Yes, I am. I have written, I've co-authored, I've done contributing chapters for books, around about 8 in all. Approximately at this stage of about 3 more in the pipeline.
Wow, that sounds great. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Trish Springfield all the way from Australia. So what are some of the things that you write? What are you, fiction, nonfiction?
Nonfiction, mostly around about speaking and communication. I have done a contributing author to a book called Parenting a Child on the Spectrum. That was about stepping up and speaking and being an advocate for your child or autistic child or ADHD. About success, about having success in your business, about being who you could be. Those are sort of the ones that have been published at the moment.
Oh, wow. That sounds great. So... do you, when you're talking about children, do you also talk about autism?
I don't talk specifically about autism because I do not have a child in that area. But my passion is being able to work with the parents to be advocates for their child. So I help them being able to step up and speak and be able to be an advocate for their child. For example, if they need to go up and talk to the school, to the teachers about their children, about how to harness the passion and the emotion that they're feeling, be able to still share that, but do it in a logical way that connects with the teacher so that they can get their message across and be their advocate without being dismissed as being so emotional or you know, this isn't, you know, you don't know what you're talking about. So my concept and where I come from is helping them to have that confidence and those speaking abilities so that they can really get their message across.
Yeah. The reason why I asked you about autism, because I have a son with autism, and I'm still trying to figure it out. But, you know, I've come a long way with him so far. And there was one time when he, you're into communication. And that was one time when he would not speak at all. I mean, I had to, like, almost twist his arm to get him to say one word, but that was when he was younger. And I think that I have been successful with him because he's saying a little bit more now than he used to. I think if I hadn't intervened, he probably would still be silent. And don't get me wrong, he's a very, very smart child. He's very smart, intelligent, he gets great grades. He just doesn't talk that much. And I understand that is one of the aspects of autism.
Yes, it is. And this is where it comes in for the parent to be the advocate for the child so that they can be able to stand there for your child when you're talking to the teachers and intervening and being that bridge, because you understand your child to a certain extent. And because he doesn't want to be, he's got better things to do than speak to people. He's doing things in his own mind. He knows where he is. And that means that you need to be the advocate to speak to the teachers, to the education, to be that bridge for him until he's ready to say what he wants to say.
He's ready to say what he wants to say when he wants to say it, you know.
Absolutely.
And okay, so so what kind of communications do you teach or advocate for couples? Let's say if you're in a relationship where nobody, where there's not much communication, what would you advise?
Look, my area is really more for speaking outside of that field and speaking to audiences and that. However, having said that, coming up in November, I'll have been married 40 years of my husband, so we must be doing
something
pretty well in the area of communication. And to me, it's, you know, when I'm teaching public speaking, when I'm talking to people about communicating, I'm talking about knowing your audience and being aware and of knowing what you want to say and where you want to go. That actually is much the same thing you need to be doing in your relationships. It's being who you are and being genuine. Having the courage to stand up and talk openly to your partner about what's affecting you and what's not affecting you, and being present in the moment. I mean, how often and do we do as partners, listening to our husbands or husbands listening to wives, we turn off and we say, oh, yes, dear, but we're not actually listening. And if we were more in the moment and actually listened and then communicated, there'll be a less of miscommunication between relationships, from my personal view. I think that's important. It happens because we don't really listen to what's being said.
Wow. Congratulations for being married for 40 years. And I'm pretty sure your experience in being married for 40 years, you probably incorporated that in your book and what you're doing now.
I do incorporate some of it. And I do use a lot of my speaking things. The things that I've learned as a public speaker, it's one of my passions, one of the reasons about what I do is that most people say, I don't want to speak from the stage. I don't want to be a public speaker. I don't want to be a professional speaker. And what I say is, that's fine. What I think is extremely valuable are the techniques and skills you learn on your public speaking journey. And they're transferable to your work, to your business life, to your career, and to your personal life when you're communicating with your family and those around you. Because the things you learn on a public speaking journey, such as timing, such as being genuine, being able to share your emotions, putting your words together, listening, being able to do impromptu speaking, they are all very valuable things in business and in your personal life. You just use the same sort of things, the same techniques and strategies to be a better communicator and speaker.
You talk of public speaking. I remember the first time I stood on stage in front of people. I was nervous. My knees were shaking. And, you know, and after the speech was over, they applauded me. And I thought I was terrible. I was... I was just floored. You know, I was shaking. I couldn't stop. I just could. The nervousness and the shakiness, it was just there, you know. But I made it through it. And when I heard the applause, you know, I was just surprised. So what I want to ask is being nervous or having your knees shaking together, is that just natural for a public speaker or not?
Absolutely natural. Look, 90% of people will always tell you that fear of speaking is on the top of their fears or in the first one or two. And being nervous before you get up to speak is completely natural. even top speakers, you can sit there and watch them. You know, even your president, even anybody that you look at that you admire in speaking, if you were to ask them that question, do you get nervous? You'll get one of three answers. They'll either lie to you and say, no, they don't, because they really don't want you to think that they do. They'll tell you the truth and say, yes, I do get nervous, but I know how to make that nervous energy become the connection to my audience and to be wow. Or they'll tell you the truth and say, no, I don't get nervous, because they're just very flat. And when you listen to their presentation, it will be boring, because what they're doing is just giving you something by rote. And because they don't have those nerves, it really doesn't add the punch that you need. So nervous energy and being nervous is absolutely fine, and it really is essential to be able to have the adrenaline to connect to your audience. So it's just a matter of knowing how to use that nervous energy to your advantage. So it's okay to be nervous. It's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
Not a problem. Just work on it.
I was so nervous. I mean, I stood up there in front of those. I was called on. I was so nervous when I was nervous of being called on. And I finally was called on and I had to stand up and all eyes were on me. Everybody was listening to me, whatever I was saying at that time. And I was totally not in control, but somehow they felt I was in control of my message and of myself. And I totally was not, because my knees were shaking, my feet were shaking, but my hands and everything above my waist was just, you know, natural. But below, I was terrified.
And that's okay. Look, that's what I do mostly. One of the things I really do when I'm mentoring my clients is helping them to use that nervous energy, to use that fear, and to use it well and turn it into excitement, because it's really two sides of the same coin. The physical things that you feel, that shaking and the butterflies in the stomach, they're also the same things you feel when you're excited. So it's a matter of saying, I'm not nervous, but I'm excited, and I'm so excited I'm going to use that energy. Okay. And your audience, I mean, in the over 20 years that I've been mentoring and training, I've spoken to other speakers, to audiences, and what I've learned, the top thing that audiences really rate for great speakers is being genuine and connecting with them. And so even though you're nervous, if you're genuine in your passion and you open your heart and let people hear what you've got to say, your audience will forgive you a lot of things. They'll be prepared to take it. And really, they're there to hear you. They're not there in 95% of the time, they're not there to tear you down. They want to hear what you've got to say.
Right.
And so they're really forgiving in that respect.
Yeah, that's great. That's wonderful, because I know I remember at one time, when I was younger, I really wanted to be a public speaker. So I went out and got all these books on how to be a great public speaker. And I was reading a passage, and it was saying Americans, or people in general, would rather go out and get hit by a car than to stand up in front of an audience and speak.
Absolutely. That's what they feel. That fear is really a lot of things. It's only a small percentage that have a true psychological fear that they really need to work on, that has some physical outcomes. Most of us, I would say probably 95%, 98% even. That fear is a fear of the unknown. It's fear of not knowing what to expect, because I've never spoken before. It's a fear of I'm going to forget what I'm going to say. It's a fear of what are my peers going to say when they hear me speak, or perhaps the audience will realize maybe I'm not quite the expert I'm saying I am. They might find me out. It's all of those, plus that little negative self-talk in our mind that says, oh my gosh, I can't do this. I can't do this. So it's a matter of knowing those things, putting in place to change all those negative thoughts to positive thoughts, and to breathe. Do you know the simplest thing to get over your nerves and to conquer that fear is to just breathe. And I do that. Two or three deep breaths before I get up to speak puts me in what I call centers me and in control, because it's that fear of being out of control that takes you, you know, worries you and stops you from getting up. And when you realize that when you're up there speaking, you are actually in control. You're in control of yourself. You're in control of what's being said. You're in control of how you're going to walk around that stage and what you're going to share with your audience. So that's a very calming and empowering thing when you realize that.
Is it good to, if you're on, when you're on that stage and you're speaking to that audience, is it good to kind of tell a joke or something, or loosen up your audience by telling a joke or something?
If that's part of you, if that's what you feel comfortable and normally doing, because the worst thing you can do is try to be somebody you're not. So if you're not a good person at telling jokes, and then you try and do that, especially the first few times when you get up to speak, it could fall very flat and come back on you. So I'm terrible at jokes because I always muck up the punchline. I can never remember it.
When I say joke, I mean saying something to loosen up the audience, to try to make them laugh, not necessarily a joke with a punchline, but something to loosen up the audience. If you're talking about a serious subject or something, or your topic is serious, you might want to.
I do that. Yep. Because Robert's going to say, even though I'm terrible at jokes, if I'm going to loosen up, I usually do something that's self-deprecating. So something back on myself, something that I can say that will connect with them and really relax them a bit. For example, I was speaking to a group of executive assistants last week. Now, my favorite color is purple. Absolutely adore purple. I wear purple all the time. It's one of my branding colors. And it just so happened that the stage I was speaking on had beautiful purple curtains behind it and a purple light. So the first few words out of my mouth was, oh, well, thank you so much for arranging such a showcase for me and realizing that I love purple. And it was just like, everybody just had a little bit of a chuckle. I had a bit of a chuckle.
Yeah.
And that just made my connection with the audience. So something like that will work as long as it's you being you. You don't want to be someone else. So as long as you're natural and you're being you and you can get something like that in, it can help you. But be aware of relevance and situation. There may be areas where you don't want to do that because it really could misfire. It's not appropriate. But in the main, a couple of things that will relax you and connect you with the audience can be very good. It gets everybody on board and you're ready to go.
Tricia, what makes a great public speaker?
The top thing really is it's being able to connect with the audience. It's your passion and it's your story. And I guess what I say, it's being able to take off that mask and let people see who you really are and see what it is that you want to share. We all wear masks. And one of the reasons we wear masks is that we don't want to be vulnerable. And especially when we're speaking, quite often when you're starting out, you wear a mask because you think, well, if something goes wrong, if they don't like me, if it doesn't work, well, that's okay because that wasn't me. That was the mask or the persona I'm putting on. Really, to be able to be who you really want to be, you need to take that mask off and let people see who you are. So being genuine, being passionate, having your story and knowing your story is brilliant, and sharing those stories with people because people connect more with your stories. One thing that I'm very passionate about is timing, so that if you know if you've got 15 minutes or 30 minutes to speak, you make sure that you keep your timing right, because that's respect for your audience, the event organisers, and for anybody that's speaking or coming after you. And then add in all the techniques and strategies you want. Take the polish up. So I said, most people will get away being pretty good speakers if they're genuine, share that message, share their stories. What I do and help people then is give them the techniques and strategies and add a little bit of polish, which then takes them to that next level.
Yeah.
But those, I think, are the things that make a great speaker.
Yeah. I think it's a lot of people out here who want to be public speakers. I know I want to be a great public speaker because I like, you know, that camaraderie with the audience when you're on stage and the audience is just loving what you say. They're applauding, you know. And I think that's wonderful. I always wanted to be a public speaker. I've talked to I've talked in auditoriums, not many, but a few, on stage, and it's really something. It really is something. It, after you can get over the nervousness, I think, and if you feel that you've done a great job, I mean, you just go out and reward yourself, and you look for the next public speaking job or next venue. And I think it's great. I think it's wonderful. I want to do more of it. So,
where can we find the more comfortable you become?
I want to do more of it. I enjoy it. I enjoy informing people. I think when you're on that stage, the speaker learns something along with the audience. It depends on the topic that you're talking about. And where can we find? Where can we find your work or your books or where we can learn more about public speaking?
Okay. One of my books is Creating Confident Communicators. It's all about speaking and communication. It's up on Amazon. So if you just put in Creating Confident Communicators, you'll find it by Trish Springsteen, my name. If you go to my website, there is trishspringsteen.com. and trishel.com.au, that's trishel.com.au. They're both my websites. There's information on the Trishel. You can download a free copy of the 10 Tips for Presentations. On the Trish Springsteen site, there's my blog, so there's a lot of information there on speaking. If you want to connect with me, the speaker or MC, you can do that there. And, of course, I'm on Facebook. If you just put Trish Springsteen, look for the person in purple, you'll find my business pages and you'll find me on Facebook, and I'm happy to connect with anybody.
Yeah, I'm on Facebook, so we can connect.
LinkedIn and Pinterest and Instagram, I'm on all those as well.
Yeah. I think you have to be if you're a public speaker. You know, I want to ask a question. Like, I'm on the radio. And I'm a radio host. Do you think by being a radio host that makes me or any other radio host a public speaker?
Absolutely, George. One of the things that I say to people when I'm talking to them and I'm doing some of my meetings and sometimes at network meetings, I ask people, do you want to be a public speaker or professional speaker? And they will say, no, I don't want to. But my next question is, do you talk to people and clients? Yes, you do. Do you have products? Do you have services that you do? Yes, you do. Then you are a public speaker. You are speaking to people, sharing your message and getting paid for it. Do you speak on the radio, George? Yes, you do. You are a public speaker. Public speaking and communication underpins everything you do in life. All the skills you learn as a professional public speaker or a speaker from the stage are the things that you use on your radio station. I also have a radio show that I host every second Friday on, it's called Coach on Fire Radio, and my show is Step Up and Speak Out with Trish. And I use
it's what? Step Up? Trish, I'm going to write this down. Step Up?
Okay. My show is called Step Up and Speak Out with Trish. It's part of the Coach on Fire radio network on Blog Talk Radio. And I'm on there every second Friday. My next show is actually, that's Friday Australian time. It's Thursday your time. And so my next show for American time would be on the 29th Thursday at around about 6 p.m. I think it's Central or out of Boise. It comes out of Boise, Illinois, so around about that time.
Okay.
6 p.m.
So that's Step Up, Speak Out with Trish.
Okay. Absolutely, yeah.
Step
so
Up.
Yes, with, George, I'm going you to... are a public speaker, George. You are speaking every time you're on the radio, and you are practicing your skills. Well done.
Thank you so much for being on the show. And I'm going to check out your show, Step Up, Speak Out with Trish, because I really want to talk some more about this, because I am totally, personally, I am totally intrigued with public speaking. And I think I can grow to love it. And thank you so much for being on the show. Will you be appearing anywhere in the future doing public speaking?
Probably. I'm hoping to get over to America at some stage. I'm mm-hmm. putting that out there. If anybody over there wants me to come over and wants to hear an Australian speak, just contact me and let me know. I'd be happy to come. I am looking, and there's a possibility that with a couple of people, we may be doing a cruise in February, speaking mm-hmm. on a cruise ship. So I will put that out on my Facebook pages if that comes. That's the people that I'm associated with Coach and Fire Radio. We're putting that together. And we do have mm-hmm. a summit, a tele-summit that we're doing in October, which we'll be putting out. So you will hear me on that tele-summit as well, going out to America. Okay. So there's a couple of options, and I do webinars occasionally. So get onto my pages, follow me, and you'll soon see places where I'll be speaking. And if you want me to come over there and speak, you contact me. I would be happy. I love America.
Ah, we love you too. Trish Springsteen on the George Wilder Jr. Show. And we will be talking again. Thanks for being on the show. You were wonderful. You provided some great insight into public speaking, especially to me. And I will be checking out your pages. And especially I'll be checking out Step Up, Speak Out with Trish. Thanks for being on the show.
You're very welcome, George. Very much enjoyed it. Have a wonderful evening over there.
You too. Bye-bye. All right, Trish Springsteen on the George Wilder Jr. Show. She was great. She was wonderful. Oh, man. All right. Let's move right along. If we can't bring up something here, let's see if we can try. Okay, let's try this one.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived.
Every few generations, we Americans are called upon to defend our country, to defend it not so much from foreign dictators or war or terrorism, but from those here who have no commitment to progress or democracy or representative government, no commitment to anything except their own out-of-control minds and the bottomless pits of their egos. Our society has thrown up these people before. Joseph McCarthy, George Wallace, Father Coughlin, Jefferson Davis, Aaron Burr, the Know-Nothings, the Blacklisters, the America Firsters, and we have always thrown them out. And now our generation has its own, the most dangerous individual ever nominated by a major party for the highest office in this country. His base wants few details and fewer facts. They just want to burn it down and blame their failures on the collective other. And Donald John Trump is their demonic messiah in Oompa Loompa's clothing. We must stop him. It is not pleasant. It is not fair that we have to do this, but it is our turn. The average report in this series will ask for about 6 minutes of your time. This one needs nearly three times as much. The text version includes more than 160 links. I encourage you to read and save, because the emperor's new clothes quality to the Trump campaign has survived these 15 months, because as we react to each outrage, our shock and revulsion has been refracted like light through a prism. But these outrages are not separate events, not even a pattern. They are simply Donald Trump. Seen all at once, they and he are horrifying, and you must see them all at once. Thus, in brief, the story so far. The Republican Party has actually nominated for president a man who attacked the Pope, who attacked John McCain for being captured by the North Vietnamese, who attacked Gold Star parents, Khazir and Ghazala Khan, and then juxtaposed their names with the phrase radical Islamic terrorism, who attacked Hillary Clinton as a, quote, bigot, who attacked her as brainwashed, as unhinged, as a monster, as the devil, as the most corrupt candidate ever, showing her face on piles of $100 bills and the Star of David, who attacked her as someone who Second Amendment people should do something about, as someone whose religion we don't know anything about, after he had explained he had never asked God for forgiveness, who attacked President Obama and implied he was a traitor, who attacked him as having been complicit in the Orlando terrorist attack, who attacked him for having lower approval ratings than Vladimir Putin, as if Putin's approval ratings could somehow be trusted, who attacked him as being born in another country, who attacked him as the founder of ISIS, then said that was sarcasm, then said it wasn't sarcasm, then attacked him again as the founder of ISIS, who attacked Carly Fiorina for her face, Hillary Clinton for her non-presidential look, Heidi Cruz for her appearance, Megyn Kelly for having blood coming out of her wherever, Mika Brzezinski as crazy and very dumb, neurotic, not very bright, who attacked the women who accused Roger Ailes of harassment, who attacked the women who choose abortion, and who said there should be punishments, who attacked a New York Times reporter because he had a condition that made his arms look atypical, who attacked Judge Gonzalo Curiel because he was of Mexican descent, who attacked Senator Elizabeth Warren over allegedly lying over her heritage to get into Harvard when she never went to Harvard, who attacked Senator Jeff Flake by saying he will not be reelected this year when Senator Flake is not up for reelection until 2018. The Republican Party has actually nominated for president a man who attacked U.S. troops in Iraq and claimed they stole millions, who has attacked Ted Cruz's father and claimed he was connected to the assassination of President Kennedy, attacked Bill Clinton and claimed he was a rapist, who attacked Mexicans as rapists, bringing drugs and crime, who attacked African Americans and claimed they were all living in poverty with no jobs and schools that were no good, who attacked Harrisburg, Pennsylvania as a war zone, and attacked the United States of America and claimed it is in a, quote, death spiral. The Republican Party has actually nominated for president a man who lied about opposing the war in Iraq when there is a tape of him supporting it, a tape recorded on the first anniversary of 9/11, who lied about opposing the war in Iraq during a speech in which he insisted, I will never lie to you, who lied about $6 million in charitable donations to veterans groups from his telethon, who lied about donating his profits from The Apprentice, about charitable donations from The Celebrity Apprentice, from Trump the Game, and to St. Jude Cancer Center, who lied about a plan to debate Bernie Sanders for charity, who lied about why he would not release his taxes because he was being audited, and then proved himself a liar by saying he would release his taxes if Secretary Clinton released emails,
who lied about how much money his father gave him, helping him to get out of college, who lied about sending his private jet to ferry stranded U.S. servicemen, who lied about talking to the Attorney General of Florida, who declined to investigate Trump University after she had been given a campaign donation, who lied about his business in Russia, who lied about meeting Russian President Putin, who lied about offering child care to his employees when it was child care for his hotel guests, who lied about some people wanting a moment of silence for the murderer of 5 Dallas policemen, who lied about seeing thousands of Muslims in New Jersey celebrating 9/11, who lied about 9/11 hijackers sending their wives and girlfriends home to Saudi Arabia, who lied about thousands of Syrian refugee terrorists being secretly admitted to this country, who lied about the Chicago police urging him to cancel a rally, who lied about the Chicago police saying they could solve crime there with tough police tactics, who lied about how there was no drought in California, how he never said Japan should have nuclear weapons, how he opposed the ouster of Egyptian President Mubarak, how the unemployment rate is 42%. Who lied about ISIS making millions a week in selling Libyan oil, who lied about dozens of secret terrorist cases in this country, who lied that a protester who tried to rush onto his stage had ties to ISIS, who lied last May and again last week about refugees entering this country carrying cell phones with ISIS flags on them and phone plans prepaid by ISIS. Can you hear me now? The Republican Party has actually nominated for president a man who congratulated himself in 2 tweets and a press release for predicting terrorist attacks like Orlando while bodies still lay in the Pulse nightclub, who congratulated himself after the killing of Dwayne Wade's cousin, who congratulated himself on predicting Brexit, even though 3 weeks earlier he had never heard of Brexit, who congratulated himself on Republican convention TV ratings, even though those for his closing speech were lower than John McCain's, who congratulated himself by disseminating a video showing how much of that speech's total running time was taken up by applause, who congratulated himself on having the world's greatest memory, then 3 weeks later testified in a deposition he had no memory of ever saying that. The Republican Party has actually nominated for president a man who has proposed that Russia or China should enact a Watergate-like hacking of Hillary Clinton's emails, who has proposed banning Muslims from entering this country, then said it was only a suggestion, then proposed...
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio.
All right, that was Keith Olbermann. One of my favorite people. All right, let's move right along. Trump proposes reinstating stop and frisk at event aimed at black voters. This guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Trump does. This is, I'm looking at Huffington Post, folks, so I'm not making this up. He's going to propose stopping and frisking black people as they walk down the street. Stop, just get out of the car. You see a black person, jump. What is that? That's the same as profiling, isn't it? You profile a person and all of a sudden the way they look or the way they act or whatever makes you want to get out and search them or frisk them or whatever. A federal judge ruled the practice was being used unconstitutionally in New York and resulted in racial profiling. But Trump wants to do it. He wants to reinstate this. He's crazy. Every time Donald Trump says something, he says it without thinking. Somebody in his campaign or his circle should trying to teach him or show him or before he opens his mouth and says something stupid. But Trump is probably, you know, he wants to say what he wants to say. He's probably not listening to anybody. You know, he's going to say what he wants to say. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump thinks the best way to stop crime in the city of Chicago and black communities is to broaden the use of stop and frisk, a policing tactic that has been proved to be discriminatory against blacks and Latinos. But yet he wants to reinstate this. Wow, this guy is crazy. And he's talking about getting African-American votes. this is not the way to go in order for him to be getting Black American votes. As of now, I believe truly that Donald Trump does not have the Black vote. He does not have the Latino vote. He does not even have the young vote, the women vote. He has the white guy vote, you know, because if you look at his rallies, there's nothing but white people at his rallies. Most of them are, you know, as a lot of people have described, haters, deplorable. They are deplorable. A lot of them are. Racist, white supremacists. These are people who are part of his circle. These are the people who are giving him poll numbers that he has. These are the people who flock to him because he said he's going to build a wall and that he's going to deport all of these Mexicans. He's going to build a wall. He's going to kick out Muslims. He's not going to allow refugees into the country. Yeah, I wouldn't trust Trump as much as I trust Hillary Clinton, you know, but this guy, I mean, I wouldn't even be talking about Trump if he wasn't running for the highest office in the land. He would be a misnomer. I never watched his television program, The Apprentice. I anytime it showed up on my television screen, I grabbed a remote real quickly and just, you know, changed the channel. I didn't want to see that garbage because it seemed like when I was watching, it seemed like The Apprentice was nothing about making other people feel small while making Donald Trump feel so superior over them. You know, over them. He was feeling so superior. I'm Donald Trump, you know. And Donald Trump is all about himself, nobody else. If Donald Trump's is trying to change the way he presents himself in order to get votes, don't buy it. Because once Donald Trump is in the Oval Office, if he's voted in, he's going to go back to being the tyrant that he always was and is. He can't change. Donald Trump is who he is. He may try to soften his tone a little bit. But he's only softened his tone so he can get your vote, vote him in office. Once he's president, he's going to go back to that racist tone. He's got to appease those people who have given him those high poll number ratings, even though Hillary is still leading in the national polls. But still, he's so close to her in the percentage fight. And he wants to stop and frisk Black people. And that is no way to get the African-American vote, Donald. Every time he opens his mouth, he says something. And I'm wondering why isn't he in jail? Why he's not being totally investigated? Because every day there's something in the press where Donald Trump has done something illegal, like raiding his charity for his own personal use. Now, any other politician would be ran out of office. And there are so many other lawsuits and I'm not going to mention a lot of these things because, you know, they're still probably trying to sort some of this stuff out. But it's a lot of things against Trump, and especially inciting violence 2 or 3 times on Hillary Clinton. Where is the Secret Service? Why isn't this guy locked up? I thought inciting violence towards a public official was against the law. Apparently not for Trump, not for Donald J. Trump. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show in the city of Chicago. We're about to have a teacher strike, folks. Yes, there's about to be a teacher strike in the city of Chicago. And the thing about it, they're striking. They're striking and they were going to receive a raise. They're striking, even though the mayor said he's giving them a raise, and they are deciding to strike. Now that's ironic. They're getting a raise and they're still going to strike. The Chicago Public Teachers. Now, what does that tell you about what they think about the children? They are going to stop strike anyway, even though they're getting a raise. Okay, they say, well, they are saying that the mayor wants them to pay 7% into their own pensions. I don't see what's wrong with that. You ought to be paying something towards your pension. Don't put it all on a taxpayer. We're being taxed up the kazoo by this mayor. He's going to hire more, 10,000 more, 1,000 more officers. And how is he going to pay for it? We know how he's going to pay for it. He's going to find a tax somewhere to raise. He may tax the air that we breathe. Who knows? And that's serious. Someone made a joke about it, but they could do that. You know, I mean, these guys are after your money. So there's going to be a teacher strike. I mean, this is just crazy. I'm hearing second week of October. By the time I get off the air tonight, I'm pretty sure I'll know for sure that these guys, if they're going to strike or not. But they sound as if it was really going to happen, a teacher strike. I couldn't care if they never went back to school. I couldn't care if the teachers, some of the teachers. Now, we got good teachers. We have bad teachers. But this is just ridiculous. They are thinking more about themselves than they are those children. There's no doubt about it. They are thinking about their pockets, their big houses, their SUVs. You know, that's what they're going out partying, these teachers, their pockets. You know, they're greedy. And the thing about it, Mary Emanuel falls for this stuff. He falls and gives in to them because he falls and gives in because he's giving them a raise, but somehow they're not satisfied with that, because even by them getting a raise, they would still have to pay 7% into their own pension. Why not? I mean, if when you work in a regular job, they're taking out for Social Security, you paying towards your own Social Security. So why can't they pay toward their own pension? It's just, they don't want to do that. They're pissed off about that. So they're going to be taken to the streets, blocking the traffic on the expressways, all downtown. I mean, they've just got to make a show of it. And I think it's a ridiculous and a stupid show of it, because the children of these public schools in the city of Chicago are going to be out of school in the streets because of these people, these greedy ass teachers, this greedy ass teachers union. And I couldn't care if they strike. They can strike for the rest of the decade for all I care. You know, so it's just that I'm fed up with them, you know, striking just for the hell of it. And, you know, these teachers in the city of Chicago are some of the highest paid in the nation. They are paid pretty damn good, just like these police officers. The teachers in the city, they're not in poverty like the kids that they're teaching or the parents of the kids that they're teaching. And a lot of these teachers look down on some of these parents and kids because they are poor. And the teachers are getting a big ass salary and still striking. They're getting a raise and they're still going out on strike. So how can you feel sorry or sympathy for some of these teachers who are not dedicated? They're all about padding their pockets and they have this union behind them. It's crazy, folks. So we're going to have a teacher strike. That's always interesting. At least the Chicago Press think is interesting. They give the reporters something to report, something to do. Wow. Okay, we got gas shortages in the South. And a lot of people are saying, wow, are we going to have gas shortages up here in Chicago and in the North? But gas shortages, yeah, in the South. That is something. I remember back in the 70s, there was a gas shortage in Chicago, and I was in one of those lines at a service station waiting to get gas, and there was about 10 or 12 cars in front of me. So it's bad when there's a gas shortage, you know. So, and I'm also hearing that premium gas is a waste of money, and we all have purchase premium gas at the gas station. And You know, and now they're saying that premium, you've just been wasting your money. You know, however, I mean, if you got a car, they're saying if you have a car that takes regular gasoline, well, then you better use regular gasoline, because if you put premium in there, your car is not going to run any better. It's not going to sound any better. It's not going to hold up any better. However, if you have a car that should only take premium gasoline, then that's what you do. You use premium. But the majority of the cars out here on the road, they fill up with regular gasoline, not premium. They fill up, they are capable of using regular gasoline, but a lot of people with cars that are capable of, they're capable of filling up with regular gasoline, they're putting premium in their car when they don't need it. It's not going to do any better. And it's the news saying that it's a waste of time. Well, I'm going to tell you, folks, I don't have to worry about that anymore. So, all right. That's just something I just threw out there. The Bears, as you know, the Bears are 0-2. And I talked about the Bears' loss, I believe it was yesterday, because it was Monday Night Football. Or was it two nights ago? Monday Night Football. And the Bears lost. And they lost. They did a messy job. And now people are calling for Jay Cutler to be gone. And I, you know what? I'm calling for him also to be gone. Jay Cutler has been the Bears' quarterback for 7-8 years. And yet he has not taking the Bears to a Super Bowl. You know, I mean, when Malovey Smith was the Bears coach, I believe he took the Bears to the playoffs at least two or three times. But still in all, that's not making it to the Super Bowl. So I do think after 8 years of nothing from Jay Cutler, but sacks, interceptions, and fumbles, I think it's time for Jay to go. I honestly believe he will not be here next year as a part of the Bears family. I honestly believe that. And the fans are going to run him out. You know, it's not going to be about the coaching, the management. The fans are going to run him out of the city of Chicago. Nobody want to spend their money on these high price ass tickets going to see the Bears and they lose. It's like it's a gamble when you go see the Bears. And as I was saying before they even played on Monday night, that they were going to lose. I say a lot of things about the Bears. I really don't want them to lose, but in my gut tells me that they're going to lose. And they lose. So Jay Cutler is gone. Okay, and I'm not a sports guy. I'm not a sports reporter. I don't know jack about it, but I do live in Chicago, and I am a Bears fan. It's just that 8 years of Jay Cutler and no Super Bowl is just too much. The last time the Bears won the Super Bowl was in 1985. Mike Ditka was the coach. We had Walter Payton, super running back. 8 years of Jay Cutler, nothing. Jim McMahon, hey, Super Bowl, 1985 Super Bowl, but 1985 Super Bowl, but that was 31 years ago. 31 years ago. All right, you've been listening to George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We have about 8 minutes left into the show, folks. It's been great. It's been wonderful. I want to thank my guest, author Tish Springfield from Australia. Oh, yeah, folks, we get people calling this show from all around the world, and that's great. I have guests on this show from all around the world, and that's wonderful. And that's wonderful to know that the George Wilder Jr. Show reaches from one end of the spectrum to the next. And that makes me proud, and that makes me want to keep on doing the show, because it's all about making the world a better place, and we're going to keep at it. Keep at it, because that's what it's all about. Okay, here we go. Let me see. We're looking for something here. We are looking for something here. HHH. Higher. Okay. You are listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting live out of the city of Chicago. And we were talking about public speaking. And that's always been a subject to my heart because I love to speak in the public. But I actually think of public speaking as speaking in front of a live audience. Okay, I know I'm a public speaker, but you know, there's no live audience in front of me, at least not yet. So public speaking, if you're thinking about public speaking, if you want to be a public speaker, check it out. It is fun. It's nerve-wracking. But after you get through speaking to that audience and they, you know, giving you that applause, you have done something great and you are on your way to a great career as a public speaker.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio.
Before we go, I wanted to say something about Bruce Rauner, the governor of Illinois. Well, he's a failed governor. He's been in office 2 years and he hasn't done jack for this state. He's done a lot of things by executive authority, but nothing legislatively. He has a Facebook page where he's talking live to, I don't know, to the world or to the state of Illinois. I'm not sure. But anyway, he has a Facebook page where he was talking live. I think it was about 20 to 30 minutes. I didn't go. I don't need to hear anything this guy has to say, you know, because he hasn't done anything for the city of Chicago. He has done anything for the state of Illinois. Why would I want to hear this guy talk? You know, so I just thought I'd let you guys know this guy has a Facebook page going live and he's taking questions. And the thing about him taking questions, his staff is picking the questions that he wants to answer. Now, that's not a good thing. All right. Join me tomorrow, folks. Bye-bye. Take care.
The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. It is all about making the world a better place. Join me.